Blog Talk Radio.
Thanks for being here with the Wise Women Media Radio Show. I also wanted to thank our guest for coming. That would be Meryl Ann Butler. Are you on the line with me, Meryl?
I am.
Oh, good. Well, thanks for being here. Give me just a second because I wanted to name our sponsors. for this show. We want to thank Grand Tree 7, Here Be Monsters, Daughters of Isis, Hoodoo, Power New Media and Public Relations, Tarot and Stars, Florida Nature Photos, and we also want to remind everybody we can be found at wisewomenmedia.posteris.com. And also hit us up at that link at our wepay.com site to help keep us on the air every week. Meryl Ann Butler is a Renaissance woman. We've met quite some time ago, maybe 2007, I'm thinking. 2008, yeah. We actually met in person, but we met through the Kucinich campaign for president in 2008. So, but we were, I think we were friends online probably for the year before that. Am I right?
Maybe. That's an awful long time ago to remember. So I don't remember what I had for lunch.
Yeah. Well, you know, as we get to become wise women, it's almost like, you know, the memory fades a little bit from time to time. So it's hard to remember the details, but I remember one of the first things you had told me about was the Spirit and Stardust speech by Denis Kucinich, which
yeah.
Unfortunately, I think that was actually transcribed in 2002, so we weren't yet in the world of YouTube at that time, and nobody got him recorded on video. Actually delivering that speech, but the transcription of it can be found online. So I remember we talked about that, one of the first conversations we had, and I went back and read that speech, and wow, it's really, even when I go back and read it today just to be inspired, it's quite amazing. So
it's incredible. My daughter was actually there in Croatia and heard that talk and called
wow.
me from Croatia.
What was the actual forum that was delivered in, actually?
Oh, it was a some young people's peace event, or I guess she was participating in the young people's portion of it, but it was some global peace event, and she felt guided to go, and she went, and she heard him, and she came home, right from the event, she called me up. I was in California at the time, and she said, Mama, you'll never guess what. I found a politician with a soul.
Wow. And
yeah.
And he still has a soul. He's never changed his course
yeah.
in how he feels about the different issues and how he has always embraced peace. Nothing about that is, he's never changed and he's never bowed down to anybody and taken on their views instead of his own. So for people out there that are listening.
Go ahead. I'm sorry. I was just going to say he's the only politician I would probably bet my life on hasn't lied to me.
Yeah, exactly. And for those of you that know anything about him, he is leaving office. He's basically been redistricted out as a congressman, and his district no longer exists. But he has started a political action committee, and that's Kucinich Action. So you can find that online. So I tend to think that he probably is going to do even more great work now that he's out of Congress, and being in Congress probably limited him in a lot of ways. So now he'll be kind of a free agent doing his own thing with his own political action committee. So that'll be great. So tell us, Meryl Ann, a little bit about how you got started with the art. And you started out painting and then went to fiber arts. So tell us about that transition as well.
Yeah, and somebody was even asking me today, and, you know, she was asking me, it's for another interview I'll be doing later next year, but we were just chatting, and she asked when I knew I wanted to be an artist, and the earliest I remember was about age 4, knowing that I was going to be an artist. And when I was in high school, I was very lucky. I happen to live near a incredible teacher. His name is Harold Stevenson, and he studied with Norman Rockwell. And so I took evening classes with him all through high school and then became apprenticed under him for a couple of years after high school. And then after that, I ran my own art school for 10 years and teaching, you know, traditional drawing and painting. And a lot of that is in my little, my video, which has my YouTube video, which has the same title as our talk tonight, Visionary Artist Marilyn Butler on Creativity and Joy. And that does show some of the beginning paintings. And then what happened was I got allergic to oil paint after being around it so much. And at that same time, I was trying to figure out what to do with that. My husband died in a plane crash, and I relocated across the country with my little 5-year-old daughter. And a lot of things changed. And I was looking for, you know, it was pretty devastating for us, and I was looking for a way to kind of facilitate healing for myself. And what I noticed was that when I touched different fabrics, different ones felt healing to me, particularly silks. And I started wearing silk every day because I was, you know, kind of in such devastation that I was eager to incorporate anything into my life that felt even a little bit soothing. And so that's how I started, you know, I just actually became very sensitized to the vibrations of colors and the vibrations of textures. And so I started wearing silk every day, and it, you know, pretty much healed me. And working with fabrics and colors, it was a way I could work with art, you know, since I had become kind of allergic to oil paints. I've gotten over that now. After about 10 years of being away from it, I can get near it again, but that gave me quite a few years to explore fiber. And so that's what I was doing, you know, exploring different ways I could use fabric. And then my little daughter, she was 6 or 7 then, 6 I guess, she wanted to do what mommy was doing. So I was, you know, stitching away, and she wanted to do it too. So I invented a way for her to make a quilt that was quick and easy. And another 10 years later, that turned into my book, 90-Minute Quilts. So, you know, it's all of the things that I've developed really have kind of come out of my own yearning for healing for myself.
I noticed that in the pictures that are taken of you in regards to the fibers and the materials that are behind you, I noticed that you pick a lot of the colors that I would pick, like very vibrant, bright colors. I don't see a lot of muted tones. I see like bright turquoise and hot pink and magenta and gold and, you know, things that, you know, really I would say vibrate with the chakra colors. And I've always associated bright colors with joy and with healing and peace and happiness.
Well, I've never been accused of being a muted person. So.
Yeah, me either. How old were you when your husband died?
I was 30. That was my Saturn return.
Yeah, I was 20. Oh, my goodness. I was 28 years old when mine died as well. So very, very close in age. And now, how would you say, where are you on your journey in regards to healing?
Oh, boy. Well, I'm way past healing and into euphoric joy.
So you've come a long way. You've come a long way since that time of indecision.
Yeah.
Make the transition from all of that art and basically start another art form, which is writing? How did that transition happen?
Well, who knows? I just, you know, what I learned after a while was to be sensitized to doing what I love to do. And when I was in high school, actually, I enjoyed writing. And back in those days, we didn't have computers, and I didn't know how to type. And so my mother was always typing up my reports and stuff for me. And she kept saying, "You're such a good writer. You should go into, you know, being being a writer or an English teacher or something. And but I wanted to be an artist, and so my mother, God bless her, she meant well. She said, well, why don't you get a degree in English, so if you don't make it as an artist, you know, have a way to make a living. And I said, Mom, if I get a degree in English, that will make sure I'll never be an artist. And so
exactly. The thing about the starving artist is a really true thing, but I think our mothers always want to protect us, and they don't want us to be disappointed. But they also want us to be able to support ourselves if we don't get married or if for some reason we end up alone. So, yeah, she meant well.
He certainly did, and she was looking out for my best. But what I knew at that young age, which was 14, I mean, I remember making that decision when I was 14, because I was, you know, I grew up in New York, and I saw all these people going to work in New York City on the Long Island Railroad, and, you know, I'd see them, you know, commuters, and they were like automatons, you know. I mean, the life was gone from their eyes. And I thought, you know, I'm not interested in that. So I've never had a 9-to-5 job in my life. And sometimes it's been a little scary and a little tricky and sometimes hard. But, you know, I was never willing to give up the life of my soul for that. And so it kind of worked out, I guess, because things have been, I would say the last 10 years, you know, I've been living my bliss every day. Now, the kind of life I've lived, you know, other people looking at it might be scared to live it because it doesn't always look like I have financial security. But you know what? I don't think anybody does. I mean, my friends who had houses lost them. So, you know, I didn't have a house, but I didn't have a house to lose either. And what I did have was my joy, and no one can take that.
I think that's an interesting thing that people are starting to realize now, is that these attachments to things and to material wealth, I don't even like to call it wealth anymore, but none of that matters anymore. And like you said, you didn't have a house. I don't have, you know, right now I have no job. I'm working a part-time job, but I'm underemployed like so many other millions of Americans right now. But, you know, I was just talking to my partner the other day, and I told him, I said, Leon, I said, we don't have a house to lose. So that actually is really freeing experience. You know, we don't have anything to walk away from. And
with all
the
stock market crashes were happening, I don't even remember when they were, but I have friends who remember like the exact date that all those things were crashing because they lost so much, and I didn't lose anything. I didn't even know it was happening. So
so it really is an extremely freeing experience to not have those things. And right now, you know, I don't know how next week how I'm going to put gas in the car. So I just, you know, after living in a state of panic for the past year and just really being traumatized by everything, I've basically just thrown up my hands and just, you know, put it all at the foot of the goddess and just said, you know, this is how it has to be, because this is totally at this point out of my control. So
well,
I'm
sure.
Living by faith every day.
Yeah,
you know,
you just have to let the magic happen. I was so broke one time.
I think when we get to that surrender, the magic does happen. But we have
it
to
does.
Surrender, you know, first. And
only because we don't let it happen unless we surrender. I mean, I think we could let the magic happen, but I think hardly anybody does until you really get down to the that's what I've learned, is not to have to get broken down to the point of surrender to let the magic happen. So now I let the magic happen every day. But let me tell you, there was one day, you know, I was like really broke for a long time. I had a lot of things happen to me. I had over $100,000 of my artwork stolen out of my car on the way to, you know, seeing some art gallery about doing a show there. And then a week or two later, a woman ran a stop sign and hit me, and I was injured. And during all this time, I was, you know, I don't know, 5,000 miles from home, so I never got back home. So it was a big a big, long, kind of challenging thing, but it was an opportunity to let magic happen. And so for a while I wasn't working, and it was tricky about the money. And I remember one time I was driving my little Toyota Tercel, which got like a zillion miles to the gallon. But I remember one day I only had like $2 for gas. And actually $2 back in those days, you know, I could drive around for quite a few days in that Tercel.
Right.
I went up. Yeah, I went up to the gas station and bought $2 worth and went in and went to pay. And the guy said, "You just got $2 worth of gas?" And I said, "Yeah." And he said, "I think you need more gas than that. I'll pay for a couple of gallons." And this was the guy at the gas station.
Oh, my God.
So, yeah. So, you know, I mean, that was just a magical, wonderful thing. And I have magical, wonderful things like that happen all the time. And, you know, it's stuff like that you never expect, but all of a sudden, there it is. I needed gas, and there it was. You know, I've had days where I woke up in the morning, and, you know, maybe I was lucky to have breakfast, but not sure where lunch was coming from. But let me tell you, every day by lunchtime, something happened.
It's definitely been like this here for the past year. So I've just been really, really grateful to anybody who's been able to help. And, you know, and it really clearly defines that, you know, your family might not necessarily be your family, that there's people that even get closer than family. And I'm really, really grateful for those people. It's just been amazing. So, yeah, so I'm in a position of surrender and letting the magic happen, and that's basically where I'm at right now. Tell me how...
And what I learned is being sensitized to that. Yeah, go ahead.
Tell me how you became the senior editor of Op-Ed News.
Well, I'm only one of 10 senior editors.
Uh-huh.
I don't know. I just, you know, I mean, it's, I think, you know, I don't know what the numbers are. I know there's a lot of editors, maybe 100, and I know there's a lot of writers, maybe 1,000 or two. I mean, mm-hmm. It's a big organization. And I've been writing there for, I don't know, since 4, 5, 6 years. And, you know, what I love about it is that Rob Call, the editor, he gives me freedom pretty much. You know, he always has, to do what I want to do, write what I want to write about, explore my own stories and do that. And, you know, he gets my best work because he gives me a lot of freedom. And I don't know, one time he called me and we were talking about a story, and I was surprised how many clicks were clicked, you know, how many times it was viewed. And I said, gee, I don't know why that many people read the article. And he said, well, it's good. You're a good writer. So, anyway, partly I'm a good writer because I choose the topics to write about that I love and I really want to explore. And so I've been contributing ideas and stuff. And, you know, Rob called me up, I don't know, a while ago, 6 months ago or something, and maybe it was less, and he said, you know, I wanted to invite you to be senior editor. Now, what senior editors do, there's kind of like, you know, there's about 10 of us in Rob, and if he has issues or questions or he's trying to figure out how to do something or how to respond to somebody, you know, we're all kind of in the thread, you know, of the emails to contribute ideas. And I've had good ideas in the past that he liked, so it was nice to be invited. And so it's what I feel like I do to, you know, my contribution to my country, you know, to write articles that are, I hope people are interested in, that are kind of enhancing the well-being and wholeness of America. And, you know, everybody can do something somehow, and that's what I'm doing, and I love it. So, yeah, I'm really honored that Rob asked me. We did, you know, the sinkhole article that you and I talked about, you know, that kind of went like crazy. We got over 20,000 views on that. So I'm
hoping
that's
amazing because I knew from reading a lot of your articles that a lot of them were not political. And if they were political, they were about, you know, joy and happiness, and candidates like Kucinich who espouse peace. And so I was kind of surprised to see you writing about that and how accurate it was, because it's really crazy that over the past 2 years with this whole Gulf oil spill, that a lot of the stories that were really happening, a lot of the detailed stories were not coming out to the mainstream media, and so many of the people that live in the Gulf region were trying so hard to get those stories out or to get anybody to cover them.
Yeah.
For you to pick
up
was amazing.
Yeah, I'm
living and, you know, the fact that you have a large readership was a big help. So this brought the story to people that might not have heard it at all and drew attention to
it. Well, when I first heard an inkling of it, it was actually something a friend of mine sent me on Facebook, and I was immediately interested because I used to live in Louisiana. I lived there 10 years, and my daughter was born there. Most of my stepkids, I have 7 stepkids, most of them were born there. And some of them still live there, not too far away. So, you know, I was very interested. But the other thing that interests me about that is, you know, I believe that the Earth is the Great Mother, and that she, you know, Mother Earth finds a way to balance things out. And if we start doing, you know, if people start doing stuff where they're chopping away at her in one place, you know, it's going to fill in another place. And in the overall scheme of things, you know, I don't think it's necessarily bad. I think that Mother Earth is always doing a way to heal herself, you know, but then, of course, Mother
Sorry,
Earth
my dog's... but
that's okay.
I agree that, you know, Mother Earth will find a way to balance, but this is almost like, it's almost like after all of this that's happened with the Gulf oil spill, it's almost like she's being wounded repeatedly, like deep water drilling, for instance, is just like, it's like slashing her open with a knife. And it's the fact that these petrochemicals, including oil itself, are being stored in these salt caverns, which are old, which were not built to support this kind of storage of these particular chemicals. I mean, I don't understand how this can happen and how the corporations can do this with impunity.
It's idiotic. It's completely idiotic. But they don't realize that. I don't think any of them realized how idiotic it was until stuff like this started happening. I mean, you know, now people who thought it was a good idea to use, you know, these salt domes to store stuff, that nothing could possibly happen, are starting to see that something can happen. And one of the scientists said, you know, the tricky part with this is there really isn't anything we can do to stop it.
Yeah, this is the thing that bothers me. Now, I've looked at some of these maps, like Edgar Cayce maps and the one by Mike Scallion and all these other maps of the futuristic United States, of what it's supposed to look like, you know. Well, they've got one for 2012. They've got one for 2050. And what really frightens me as I look at those is that the United States is actually split in half. In all of these maps, they have that one common denominator where the United States split in half, that where Louisiana itself is almost all gone, where the mouth of the Mississippi, basically the delta part, is gone, and it's just like a huge, you know, cavern, not cavern, but a huge gaping area of where the mouth of the Mississippi goes into the Gulf. And most of Florida is gone, which scares the hell out of me because I live in Florida. And you know, all of these things can be seen on these futuristic maps, and you have to wonder what is going to happen to precipitate that. One of the things, too, that's really weird is each one of these maps has a different Florida. that's actually above the water. So some portions of Florida in one map will be there, and other part, you know, other maps it won't be, and it's really hard to say, you know, what of Florida will remain if something cataclysmic was to happen. What part of Florida would remain, and how high above sea level would you have to be safe? Is another
big
question.
Well, here's the thing. This is why I believe it's so important. And why I want to live my life with every step in joy, and every step I take is an intuitive, you know, I'm like checking within about what my vibration feels like, and every step is what's the next step that's the most joyful, because you can't tell when cataclysmic events are going to happen necessarily consciously, but unconsciously, if your decision is to make every step forward to enhance my experience of joy, then I believe that our inner guidance system is going to guide us to the place where we will be that will bring us the most joy. And if that means safety, then that's where we'll be. And so, you know, I mean, the thing is, you could choose to live in St. Louis because you're scared of California falling off. And maybe you love California and you wanted to live there, but you didn't. You went to the safe place. And you lived there for 50 years of your life and you were miserable. And then somebody gets married, so you fly to California for the weekend, and you're there when it falls off. You know? So, I mean, the thing is, if we just follow our joy, we'll be in exactly the right place. Another person could live in California their whole life, and for that whole 50 years live there. And then the time that it's going to fall off, they find inner guidance that they're supposed to go to Florida for something. And then they're not there. So I think those things happen. I think we follow our inner guidance. And that brings us, you know, to safety. If safety is what brings us joy. Or to adventure. If adventure is what brings us joy. And most people aren't trained at all to follow their intuition about, you know, what step to take. We've been taught in school and in life and socially that, you know, don't go by feelings, don't go by your intuition, you know, figure it out scientifically. Well, you know, in my life experience, scientifically didn't have the right answers for me.
Right. I'm in a situation now where I'm feeling, as I'm approaching my second Saturn return, that, you know, there's a lot of ties that are being cut here in Florida for me personally. So I'm trying to figure out where my next step is, and I think right now I'm just in a holding pattern. So I'm content with that. So I'm just trying
to
learn new and develop low-tech or no-tech ways of doing things, you know, learning how to be sustainable. I've taught myself to knit, and I just sold first piece yesterday.
I saw that gorgeous thing picture you had.
Yeah, because I was knitting two scarves, and I sold the first one yesterday.
Wow, that's
so
awesome.
I'm thinking, okay, well, I haven't been able to find steady work doing anything that I'm trained for. So maybe this is just up my alley. Maybe this is what I'm supposed to be doing now. So tomorrow I start on a hat. I'm going to be making my first hat.
Wow. That's awesome.
And I thought, you know, with the bulky yarn and stuff, I could probably make a hat in like a couple hours. It's not like it's going to be really hard to do. And then once I set up the Etsy store, then there you go. But I need to be, I need to find an alternative way to support myself, and obviously jobs are not going to cut it. And the other thing about Florida is for about 7 months out of the year, there is no business conducted here because we have a tourist season. Yeah, the tourist season only lasts from like November until April. And then after that, there's no business. So.
Yeah, let me make a suggestion to you about yarn. My friend Amana Nova years ago founded Mango Moon Yarns, Do you know about Mango Moon?
No.
She's since sold the business, and you know whoever bought it has the same name. But this is a wonderful story. Amana was, I think, in Pakistan, and she was in some city, and she was noticing that the women were, you know, pretty much abused and, you know, I don't know, thrown off cliffs and stuff. You know, just horrible ways that they treat women there. And she was trying to, you know, she wanted to change that. And she knows that economics can change things. So anyway, and she's into recycling. So what she did was she went to, I think, India, and she got recycled silk saris. And they put them through some process where they rip them all up into little tiny shreds. And they're beautiful, bright colors. And then she brought them to these gals in Pakistan, and they would spin them into yarn. And then ship the yarn back here, and she sells it. And she was in Vogue magazine and stuff. And the yarn is the most amazing. It's 100% recycled silk. It feels soft, and it's slubby and, you know, gorgeous, and it's made up of all these bright colors. So anyway, what I remember about it was pretty soon the women were running the town, and the men were working for them. And they built their kids a school and stuff. So, you know, if you ever wanted to find Mango Moon yarn and use it, you would know that you were also assisting other women, you know, to help.
It's amazing. I just found them on Facebook. I just now found them on Facebook. And
yes.
I'm looking at them right now. I'm looking at the colors and everything. Really incredible colors. Oh, my God.
It's extraordinary stuff, yes.
Wow, this is amazing. Well, I'm really glad you turned me on to them because, I'd be happy to use some of their stuff. I would really rather use something that's recycled and also empowers women. I think that's really, really important. But, yeah, I'm just in the holding pattern, and I'm just waiting for my next direction. But, down here, I think my opportunities are over. And that means, you know, I'm kind of bittersweet about it, like bittersweet, sad. You know, because I have a long, long history in this area from 1968-69. But, you know, I can retire somewhere else. I'd be very happy to do that. And I'm really, really looking at North Carolina. Leon and I really love it there. And, you know, we visited there and just really love the state. And I love the temperature. You know, I'm really not for the heat that we have down here for, you know, a good portion of the year. So up there,
it's not as soggy in North Carolina as it is in Florida. Florida's soggy to me. It's just so wet.
And it's just not comfortable. It's not comfortable for me anymore. Right now, we're having perfect weather. I've found that if you're in this state, the perfect weather starts in October and it goes till about March, and then after that, it's over. But from October to March, it really is like spring up north. It can be compared that way. Or fall. You know, there's some days that are very fall-like. Today was just perfect. It was like 65 to 80 degrees pretty much.
It was perfect
the whole day
here, too. I loved it. Yeah.
Blue sky.
But what's interesting to me is every time I've made a big change and moved somewhere and thought maybe I wasn't going to like it, it actually ended up always being better than where I was before.
And there's obviously lessons that we have to learn when we go to these different places, too. So,
when I came back to Virginia,
life lessons are not learned in one place. I don't agree with just.
Well,
I love living
in the Southwest. I loved Arizona and I loved California. It's really healthy for me, and I just love the weather. And I'm much more of an outdoor girl. I didn't think I was an outdoor girl when I lived here because I'm allergic to every bug that there is. But there's no bugs in California, so I found out I was an outdoor girl and a lot healthier than I thought. And I loved living there. And I was reluctant to come back to Virginia because I don't like the climate. But I came back to help my elderly dad. And you know what? It's just, I mean, I still miss the climate, but I'm so thrilled to be here. For one thing, my dad and I are now best buddies, and that was pretty much a big change in our relationship, and I'm just thrilled about that. But the other thing that was unexpected was, you know, when I came back here 3 years ago, I had no idea that my daughter was going to have a baby, and now I have this little granddaughter who I might have mentioned to you that the midwife was late, so I actually was the one to catch this baby on her way into the world. And so I'm just so thrilled to be here, and I wouldn't have been so happy about being in California and not being able to be part of this baby's life. So,
it all worked out for the best.
Totally. Yeah.
For the move, you know, and the fact that your father and you are able to be together, you know, as he's getting on in age. So you have that relationship, you know, so he's not alone.
That's right. Yeah.
Tell us
and
about your book.
Yeah.
Tell us about the 90-minute quilts, and then you have a second edition to that for more 90-minute quilts. So tell us a little bit about how that project was birthed.
Yeah, well, that actually started when I taught my daughter how to make a quilt. And when she was, I basically designed this whole technique to be fairly quick and easy. Now, of course, it took her more than 90 minutes. She was only 7. But, you know, it took us a few days with her attention span. I think we had that quilt done in a week. And then she exhibited at my local quilt guild show when she was about 7. She was so proud of herself. And, so like many other things, I thought that was just about, you know, a little project for her. And then, I don't know, the next thing I knew, I was starting to teach classes in it. And people loved it because it's a quick way to make a baby quilt. You know, it's one thing to spend a lot of hours on an heirloom type quilt that's maybe going to be passed down for generations. But, you know, babies are going to throw up on them. I mean,
true.
So, you know, the thing is, I'd rather make a baby a quick, happy quilt. And, you know, if they've thrown up on it too many times, oh, well, I guess I'll just make them another 90-minute quilt. So, and it's fun and easy. A lot of quilters get themselves involved, me too, in big, major projects that take, you know, hours and hours and months and sometimes years and years. And so in the midst of all that, it's nice to take an afternoon and just knock out a project. Or, you know, if you have to go to a baby shower or something, you know, you can get a quilt done quickly. I had actually a quilt magazine, call me one evening. It was, it was a Wednesday evening. And they called me and they said, we just had somebody, you know, drop out of the magazine that couldn't get their project to us in time. And we saw your 90-minute quilt, and we're just wondering, we're doing the photo shoot Friday, so we're just wondering if there's any possibility you could, mail us one of your 90-minute quilts by Friday afternoon, and we could take pictures. We'll do this article. And I said, I'll do you one better. I'll create a quilt for you. Before then. And they said, what, you're kidding? And I said, yeah, I can do that. They were talking to me like 4 or 5 at night. I had that quilt done that night and in the mail by 10 o'clock the next morning. And out of, you know, new fabrics. I mean, it's always more fun for a quilt magazine to show current fabrics rather than older fabrics, which is what my, you know, quilts I had already made would have been. And they were like, you're kidding, you can do that? I'm like, I'm the 90-minute quilt lady, yeah.
Well, I'm hoping to learn how to do all these fast things doing knitting as well. That's just it. I don't think you have to be as complicated to put out a really top-notch product, you know. You can put out something really beautiful. Even though I have seen some of your gorgeous things, some of the art that you had shown me a goddess piece when I met you in person. I can't remember. I remember the colors, but I don't remember the goddess. Do you remember that?
Oh,
when we met
terrible?
When we met in Tampa. I think you had one of those pieces with you because I got a picture of it.
I might have. I don't remember which one. But
I've got a picture of it somewhere in my hard drive, so I'll have to dig that up and find it. Because I remember I blogged about it.
Yeah, I do stuff with hundreds and hundreds of pieces in it. Now, my basic 90-minute quilt is a baby quilt with 35 squares and a backing. And, you know, I always tell people, my disclaimer is 90 minutes does not include shopping for fabric. It doesn't even include washing and cutting the fabric. My 90-minute time clock doesn't start till I'm actually stitching those things together. But that's still pretty quick. You're piecing it together and quilting it and binding around the edge in 90 minutes. It's phenomenal. I could do 5 in a day. And a lot of quilters like to do community service projects and donate these little quilts to places like Project Linus or Quilt for Kids and places like that. So, you know, I taught some Girl Scouts, a Girl Scout troop in Newport, Virginia, taught them the 90-minute quilt technique. And then after the earthquake and stuff in Haiti, those girls, I think there was only 7 or 8 or 9 girls in the troop, and I think they made 25 quilts to send to Haiti in like about less than 2 weeks, and they were using that technique. So, you know,
that's
it's just
amazing.
A feeling of self-esteem to help other people, yeah. Yeah, their story is in my book, actually. Their story is in my new book, More 90-Minute Quilts. They also made a quilt for a little boy with cancer that they'd never met. They just heard the story about him. He was their age, I think 11. And they heard the story about him, and he was cold. He was getting chemotherapy, and he was cold. And they decided to make him a quilt as a scout project. And so I provided him with my book and the fabrics, and they stitched it up and sent it to him, and it was just such a sweet story, and that's in my book, too. And he got well, and, you know, the girls got to feel like they helped somebody they didn't know.
So he survived, then. Oh, amazing,
mm-hmm.
amazing. And you know what? You can't help but think that when you hear stories like that and the patient or the victim survives, that it's because of the good energy that was put into whatever he got from,
right.
like, say,
but
those
you know
girls.
What?
You know?
Even if they don't. I mean, I'm a person that believes in healing that comes in many different ways. And,
mm-hmm.
you know, sometimes a person's healing is going through the veil to the next experience. And if that's the route, they still are very comforted. You know, by having a, I mean, they don't call quilts comforters for nothing, right? So, you know, to make somebody a wonderful comforter to wrap themselves in and feel your hugs and your love, you know, it's good either way, no matter which way they end up towards the end of their journey. So.
Now, you've done some remarkable things in regards to actually representing artists and meeting with artists from all over the world. Can you tell us a little bit about your trips to the Soviet Union back during, well, I guess you can call it the Cold War at that time. But how did you get involved in those?
Well, in 1987, I was involved with the Center for Improving U.S.-Soviet Relations, which is out of Baltimore. I got involved with that through my friend Wendy Bush Hackney. She's now Wendy Duke and Wendy Lee Duke. And anyway, she and I were involved with this group. She went to Russia the year before, and they were all talking about doing different projects. And my daughter just started public school that year in sixth grade, and I thought it would be a fun thing to work with something, a project with her class. So I went into her sixth grade class and talked to the kids about how to take their images of peace and put them onto fabric. And so the kids did that, and I sewed it into a quilt. And then I took the quilt to Russia, to Odessa, actually, School 119 in Odessa. And while I was there, I brought the project, you know, the fabric and the fabric crayons with me, and taught those kids the same process, and they drew their images of peace onto the squares, and I brought them back home and put it into a quilt and gave it back to the sixth grade class here. And so actually it was the first time a reciprocal quote came here from the former Soviet Union. And the reason I had done a meditation where I had seen that a lot of energy was going from here to the former Soviet Union, but that it was stuck because it needed to make the circle, like the Native Americans talk about, circulate the energy. And I couldn't figure out any way to unstick it except to just do something myself, so I did.
Wow. Amazing. Amazing. And
you
look
know
at where we're at now. I mean, we're not, I would say that the United States and Russia, that was the former Soviet Union, Russia now, we're not the best of friends, but at least we're able to have diplomacy between both countries. And there isn't that fear that we grew up with, that we were going to get nuked.
Yeah, that's right. Hiding under our desks. Oh, my God.
Yeah,
well,
hiding under our desks, I think, you know, that happened when I was in first and second and third grades, where we would have those crazy drills and we'd have the sirens and then we'd have to curl up in the embryonic positions and go under our desks and hope that we weren't nuked and hope that what really was an exercise and nothing more. I think we lost our innocence. I really do.
Absolutely. I remember being in second grade thinking, this is the craziest thing I've ever done. If there was really a bomb, how is hiding under the desk going to help me? I mean, I really knew that. But you know what I wanted to tell you was, this is an interesting quick story, is before I did my project, my quilt project, that was my second time I went to the former Soviet Union. The first time I went, I made myself a jacket that had the American flag on one side and the Soviet flag on another. And I was wearing that jacket one day when I went to the gas station, and this was back when the guys pumped your gas, that gas station attendant wouldn't pump my gas for me because he said I was a traitor because I wanted to make friends with Russians. So that was here in Virginia Beach in like 1986, 87, and then in 87, 88 I did the project, and then about, I think it was 2 or 3 months after I finished that project, the Soviet Navy came and docked right here in Norfolk, and I watched on television two sailors, an American sailor and a Soviet sailor, and they were arm in arm, and they had traded their hats with each other, and the TV interviewer was interviewing them. And the American sailor said, you know, you can shoot at a uniform, but you can't shoot a friend. And friends were made here today.
Oh, that is cool. And that's a cool story
about
how we can get past these diplomatic arguments and these threats of war and everything if we just sit down and have diplomacy and true politics by actually communicating with one another. And
right, I think we need to pass over the politicians and just let the regular people do it.
Yeah, let regular people do it, and the politicians need to step back and let peace happen, you know.
Right.
When you close the doors and you threaten one another and you close the doors to the conversations and the discussions, that's not a way to get to peace, to peaceful resolutions. So,
I love that bumper sticker, if the people lead, the leaders will follow. So here we are.
Yeah, that's exactly where we're at. We're going down into 6 minutes, so I just wanted to ask you a few other questions, and we probably don't have a lot of time on any of them. What's your belief on where are you at when it comes to this coming up election? And voting in general.
Oh, that's more than 6 minutes. Because I have to explain a lot of pieces of that. But you know what? Here's the thing. The bottom line is that I know that the most important thing for me is my relationship with my divine source. And my relationship with my divine source is not affected by who's president.
Right.
You know, it's got to boil down to that, because otherwise you end up feeling like a victim and stressed and crazed and in fear. And, you know, bottom line is I believe there's kind of like stratification of vibration. You know, you can see two people walking down the street, one person in heaven and one person in hell, you know, and they're like, you know, inches away from each other. So the reason one's in heaven and one's in hell is because of what they're looking at and their the place where they set their tone. And so, you know, I write my articles for Op-Ed News, and I try to promote, you know, the highest form of politics that I can, and then I have to leave it at that, because all I can do is the best job I can do about that and encourage people to reach for higher ground. And then beyond that, I just vibrate, you know, set my tone where I want to be. And the truth is, the stuff, you know, where you're, the other stuff that's vibrating at a lower level can't really get to you if you stay in your vibration. You know, there's that story about that gal that was walking down a dark gallery, and this is a true story. And she was like in tune with herself and in a sense of safety. And there was this, you know, she saw this guy come out of the darkness. And from a split second, she was scared, but then she just, you know, focused on her knowledge of that she was safe and she was fine, and she walked by. And then, like, the next day, she found out that some woman was murdered, like, a couple of minutes later and, you know, just a few yards away. And she went down to identify the guy. She did identify him. And she said, the police asked her. She said, yes, she passed him in the dark alley. So the police asked the guy, they said, why didn't you attack this woman, the one that you saw walking down the dark alley? Why didn't you attack her? And he said, are you kidding, with those two big guys next to her?
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah. So she was vibrating at a space of safety, and she was so safe, he interpreted her safety vibration for him in his world. The only way for her to be safe was to have two guys on either side, because otherwise he could attack her. So she was so sure of her safety that he basically had a hallucination. So
that is,
you know what?
Wild. That, but you know,
yeah,
when you watch a movie like Ghost, you know, you can actually understand how that could happen, that the vibrations vibrate at different levels for different people, and different people see different things or interpret those energies in different ways. So that's really quite cool. Very quickly, let us know where we can find you on the web and how people can get in touch with you and, you know, a little bit about maybe a future project.
Okay, and then maybe we'll talk again sometime and talk about more stuff. My website is MerylAnnButler.com. That's Meryl like Meryl Streep, MerylAnn Butler, like the Butler, like Rhett Butler, .com.
Mm-hmm.
My 90-minute quilt site is 90, that's a 9 and a 0, minutequilts, .com. I have the, I am working on getting a blog up, which probably won't be up for a couple months, and we are redoing my website, so there's a lot of stuff on the website that needs to be redone, but there's still lots of places to romp around and look at things. My YouTube video, Visionary Artist Marilyn Butler on Creativity and Joy, would show a lot of my artwork that, you know, people who are listening might be interested in looking at. And then I have my 90-minute quilts with Marilyn Butler, I think it's called. It's a YouTube video on how to do a 90-minute quilt, so you can just watch that and learn all the secrets that are in the book. So that's kind of what I'm up to now, and having a lot of fun at it.
Well, I want to thank you for being on the show tonight, and there were people listening tonight, but there's also going to be people coming in later and listening to the archive. So I encourage everybody to pass that that link around. You can see us at wisewomenmedia.posteris.com and hit us up on the WePay link to help keep the show on the air. We have another show scheduled for next Friday. Lots of surprises coming up over the next month or two. So stay tuned and come back every week and visit with us. You are always welcome to call in or chat and ask your questions. Thanks, Marilyn, very much.
Oh, thank you. This was great fun.
All right, we'll have to do it again soon.
Okay, sounds great. I'm in.
All right, good night, everybody. Thank you for being here.
Good night. Thank you.